Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Three United Nations agencies have called for a dramatic increase in the flow of aid into Gaza as the risk of famine grows and more people are exposed to deadly disease outbreaks. Israeli forces bombarded targets across Gaza today. Just before we came on air, I spoke to UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram, who is in Gaza, and I began by asking her what it is like there at the moment.
It's very difficult to describe what it's like. It's incredibly crowded in Rafah, where I am in the south. It's where about three quarters of the population of Gaza have been displaced to. And it's like a patchwork of plastic. People have built makeshift shelters out of tarpaulins and blankets and ropes, and people are living in very crowded spaces with structures being built off the side of buildings and off other structures. So it's really noisy, and the smells are very intense, and there's children everywhere. Half of the population of Gaza is children.
I know there's obviously a big shortage of food and medicine getting into Gaza. Since you've arrived, I believe you've been speaking to people who've been operated on without anaesthetic.
That's right. I went to the Emirati Hospital, which is one of the last remaining maternity hospitals in the Gaza Strip. It's in down here in Rafah. And I spoke to a woman who'd had a cesarean without anaesthetic, which is beyond a horror that, you know, she described it as a horror show. And I can't even imagine what that would be like. It had happened that morning. And the fact that she was still, you know, conscious and speaking to me, I think is unbelievable. Mm. My colleague also met a 17-year-old girl at Al Shifa Hospital in the north who'd had her leg amputated without anaesthetics. So it extends beyond anaesthesia to other really critical medical supplies like antibiotics and medicines for people who have pre-existing conditions. I was bringing in some medicine for a child who had a pre-existing condition that resulted in fluid on the brain. And unfortunately, by the time I managed to get into Gaza, the child had just passed away. So there's a lot of people here who aren't able to get the care that they need, and it's resulting in a major health crisis.
The aid that is currently getting through, that's going through the border crossings in the south of Gaza, can you explain to us why getting aid to the north of Gaza is so difficult at the moment?
We're getting trucks in with winter clothes and water and medical supplies. We then have the challenge of getting it across the Gaza Strip, and that's where things become even more difficult. We don't have enough trucks as the UN to move the volume of supplies that we need across the Gaza Strip because more trucks haven't been allowed in. We need more fuel to operate those trucks. The roads are very damaged, and so it's hard to move around, and also it's unsafe. And that's one of the main challenges with getting access to the north is getting the safety assurances that we need to be able to move. We have lodged requests, 8 of them, since the 1st of January to go on missions to the north, and we haven't got the safety assurances that we need to make those missions, and so we've had to abort them at the 11th hour. And it's not just UNICEF, this has been across the UN, and as a result, food, fuel, medicine, safe water, none of these things have been reaching the north, and the situation up there is now really at a breaking point.
Well, I was just going to ask you, do we have any idea what the situation is like in the north then, if they can't be gotten to that area?
We don't have a very clear picture, but we do know from some colleagues that remain up there or family members of colleagues that people are incredibly hungry. I think food is the main issue. There also has been no access to safe water for weeks now, which is why we as UNICEF have been trying to bring up fuel to run the desalination plant that provides clean water to the 300,000 people who remain up there. So as a result, people are having to resort to drinking contaminated water, which is resulting in disease.
We've spoken to a number of Israeli spokespeople on this programme over the last couple of months, and the message, particularly in the last couple of weeks, from those Israeli spokespeople has been that there is no restriction on aid, that aid is getting through, that Israel's doing what it can to facilitate aid getting through. I just wonder what has been your experience?
So it's true that aid is getting through, but the question is how much aid is getting through, and nowhere near enough aid is getting in. Before the escalation in hostilities, the UN used to get in 500 trucks a day. Now it's maybe 150 trucks a day, and the needs are so much greater than they were then because we're now in a humanitarian catastrophe. So far, far more aid needs to get in. And the other thing that we need with aid crossing the border is we need better visibility of when our trucks are going to get in and what's in them, because when the trucks go into screening, we lose visibility of the process. And so a truck might cross the border and we don't know which truck it is. So on any given day, we don't know what supplies we will receive from those that have been held at screening for days, which makes it very difficult for us to plan our missions.
And why are trucks being held at screening for days?
Well, they're unloaded and reloaded, and everything inside the trucks is checked to make sure that these supplies are allowed into Gaza. And there are restrictions on certain items. For example, generators. We have had generators sitting on the other side of the crossing for more than a month now, and they haven't been allowed in. The same with pipes, plastic pipes that we want to use to repair waterways. We can't get those in either. So they're screened, this slows things down, and then some materials are rejected, and often not with good reason.
And what, for example, those generators that have been sitting on the other side of the border for a month, what difference would it make if you could get those through? What would they be used for?
Oh, they'd make an enormous difference because those generators power really important services like water, desalination plants, sewage services and systems. So if we could get those generators in, we'd be able to have these services function better. So one example is down here in Rafa, there's a sewage treatment plant that has generators that are, you know, on their last legs, so to speak, and need to be replaced. And so they can only run a few hours a day. And as a result, the sewage system is leaking, and sewage is leaking onto the streets of Gaza and creating an enormous public health hazard. So if we had those generators, we'd be able to do a much better job.
As you say, you're in Rafah at the moment where it is, as you've described, really, really crowded. So many people displaced there. I believe there are 1 million people in Rafah alone in tents and who have been displaced. What are the implications of that, health implications?
Well, when places are crowded, it just creates an environment for disease to spread quickly and easily. So we're seeing cases of respiratory infections skyrocket. I spoke to some doctors who were displaced people themselves volunteering at the shelter where they were living. And they were saying that they're seeing cases of respiratory infections climb every day. They're seeing more and more children come in with that problem. Also cases of diarrhea and dermatitis. Chickenpox, lice, scabies, all of these things are spreading in these very crowded, unsanitary conditions.
And just very finally, in relation to what you're saying about the north, where you haven't been able to get to now for the last 2 weeks, like how close are we? I know there have been warnings for weeks now about the threat of famine and people dying from starvation. How close do you think we are from that starting to happen?
It's a very good question. The declaration of a famine is something that's an analytical process. So I can't make it that determination, but I can tell you that I spoke to a doctor today who said that more and more women are coming in malnourished, and as a result, babies are being born unwell and malnourished. And he's had a couple of newborn babies already die from that condition. So when we were warning about risk of famine in December, we said that in the coming weeks that risk would escalate, and I think it is escalating on the ground now.
Tess, thank you very much for speaking to us this evening. That's Tess Ingram speaking to us from Gaza.